Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutun.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, will begin this weekend, October 31st, in Glasgow, with the aim to finalise details of how the Paris Agreement can be implemented. Now, Malaysia signed up to the Paris Agreement in 2015, and we promised to join the world in taking action to curb carbon emissions. Joining us on the show tonight, we have to discuss how Malaysia's commitments to might translate into action. We have Lavanya Rama Iyer, Head of Policy and Climate Change at WWF Malaysia. Lavanya, under the 12 Malaysia Plan, which was tabled recently, Malaysia had pledged to become carbon neutral as early as 2050 and for greenhouse gas emissions to be reduced by 45% of GDP by 2030. And I'm hoping maybe you can help us understand some of these jargons, the words that the phrases that are used. Carbon neutral, carbon neutrality versus, say, net zero. And the fact that Malaysia, we in context of our greenhouse gas emissions, it's the intensity target is in relation to GDP, is relative to GDP, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe you can help us understand a little bit more about that.
Sure. Anyway, thank you so much for having me on the show this evening, Melissa and Sharad. Good evening. There are a lot of jargon, as you very rightly put it, Melissa. So let's start with the 45% emissions intensity of GDP. Okay, so that is what is actually committed in what we call the nationally determined contributions, or each country's pledge towards the Paris Agreement. Okay, so what does that mean? It is a relative target, as you rightly said, Melissa. And what we need to do is to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 45% for every unit of GDP produced in 2030 compared to what was produced back in 2005. Okay? So that's a relative target, right? But what that means essentially in terms of absolute numbers, absolute emissions, is that whilst we meet that target of emissions intensity of GDP reduction, our total emissions could and will become larger. I have some figures here for you. So back in 2005, we were emitting about 280 million tons. And what we are expected to emit in 2030, according to the national, you know, reported figures for Malaysia, is about 550 million tons. This is not including what we absorb with our forests. You know, our forests actually absorb a lot of carbon. So when you deduct that, then the figure goes down to about 300 million tons in 2030. Okay. But what the point I'm trying to make is, we have a relative target, but in terms of actual emissions, it is growing. Yeah. So then we move on to the 2050 goal that was actually recently announced by the Prime Minister, I think, during the 12th Malaysia Plan announcement. So in that announcement, it was said that as earliest by 2050, we will reach carbon neutrality, I think was the word. But subsequently, and I've checked with the ministry, it was reported again that it was actually greenhouse gas, net zero greenhouse gas emissions as early as 2050, right? Okay, so what does this mean? This means now we're looking at the total emissions, okay? So whatever we emit in 2050 or earliest by 2050 will all be reduced, removed, absorbed. Okay, so ultimately zeroing it out, right? So meaning,
Sure. Very interesting, because you know it's a fascinating but a rather complex topic, and you've already pointed to two dimensions. One is probably easier to understand, the emissions reduction. I don't mean it's actually easy to do. I just mean it's easier to understand. But the other one, of course, is the removal of greenhouse gases are already there. And you mentioned one methodology or one method of doing it rather, which is natural forest does that for us. But of course, there are technologies as well. Did I get that correct? And that there are two parts to this: emissions reduction, but also increasing the removal of greenhouse gases.
Yeah, so actually what we need to aim for very, very critically is cut down the emissions at source. So that means, you know, your coal power plants that produce emissions, those have to be cut, okay? So that's the first and foremost thing that we really have to put all our efforts in, to really cut down drastically all these emissions. Now, having done all that, there will still be some amount of, you know, inevitable emissions that will still have to be released because of human activity and so on. That can then be netted off, if you'd like, by the power of the trees, nature, in absorbing carbon. You know, carbon is actually absorbed by our trees, right? And in return, we get oxygen for us to breathe. So nature provides a really remarkable technology, if you'd like, the best technology, in order to remove carbon from the atmosphere. There are now, you know, talks of man-made technology, but I would strongly say that, you know, we must watch out for all the environmental and social safeguards when we look into those things. Let us instead invest in nature, which is abundant, and we are very blessed in Malaysia. We have lots of nature. Still 50% of our land area is forest cover. So that provides a huge benefit to us in terms of, you know, climate change, absorbs about 250 odd million tons of carbon annually.
Right. Lavanya, you mentioned cutting down emissions at the source, and that is going to be critical for us to reduce our to get to net zero. Can I ask you, for the in the Malaysian context, what is the biggest emitter, biggest carbon emitter? Which sector, which industry?
Well, certainly, like most countries, it's the energy sector. So, energy transport makes up about more than 70% of the total emissions for Malaysia. That's not surprising because currently 50 to 60% of our energy mix comes from coal power plants. Okay, so that is the major sector, and that's where we need to, of course, put most of our focus. So you would have heard about, you know, how the country wants to meet a certain target of renewable energy in the energy mix. That's to reduce the reliance on fossil fuels that currently make up the majority fuel mix in our energy production.
Lavanya, you point to actually a dilemma for governments. Governments can go to these international fora and pledge all kinds of targets, but when they come home to a range of stakeholders whom they have to now have as partners in operationalizing these targets, right? I mean, you're talking about a private, power suppliers. We're talking about industry made up of thousands of, factories and different enterprises. And then, of course, there's also domestic emissions as well. So how does the government make these pledges real in the context of Malaysia?
That's a great question, Sharad. So, you know, I think one thing that the 12th Malaysia Plan emphasizes that it should be an all-of-nation approach. And so I think there's more and more understanding that we need to do this together. As I mentioned, you know, the energy sector is a key sector, and the decarbonization of the energy sector actually enables, knock-on effect. For example, if we decide to move into electric vehicles, right? Those electric vehicles will have to be charged using electricity. So then if that electricity is still produced by fossil fuels, coal, and other fossil fuels, then you're really not seeing much of a benefit, right? You're just shifting the problem from, using petrol in your car to, coal in the power plants. So that's where, that there is an integration as well, that integrated approach that needs to be undertaken. So one key thing is to actually first focus on our energy mix. But we also, at the same time, we talked about it as well, the technology to reduce emissions, our forest cover. So that is equally important. Nature is equally important. And, we need to invest into protecting nature. So one interesting thing that's happening in the country is the creation of these instruments to protect nature for corporates to buy into. So we have a Malaysian Forest Fund, and they are coming up with these instruments called the Forest Carbon Offsets. So domestic industries, remember I said we need to cut at source, but then, whatever is remaining can be offset. So they can actually utilize the benefit of, operating in Malaysia and buy these offsets to further reduce their overall emissions.
Okay, Lavanya, we're running out of time, but I want to ask you about this international meeting that's happening, COP26, and also what kind of agreements are we expecting, especially in terms of measuring? Because, it's one of the mantras now, is you can't manage what you can't measure. And there are disputes about how to measure things, right? Especially in a country like Malaysia, trading nation, part of, global supply chains. Who pays for, the inputs at any one point? I mean, it must be a huge conundrum, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, and as a huge, very much a trading nation, we need to make sure that our products are competitive. So that, again, is the reason why we need to make sure, we manage the carbon emissions associated with our production. Because more and more trade is going to demand, carbon, a low carbon production or, carbon neutral production. And, certain countries are also imposing carbon taxes and so on, and adjustments, tax adjustments that will be imposed. So what we need to do is really, to continue to be that global player, we need to start taking strong action to reduce our emissions. And one thing I must say, it's not a gloomy story. There are a lot of interesting, innovative things that can be unleashed. We've been hearing, we've been undertaking a study on, also pathways that Malaysia can adopt with the Boston Consulting Group. And, some of the things we've been hearing is quite interesting, like using biomass to replace fossil fuel, for example, integrating reforestation activities to produce those biomass, third generation biofuels like crude algae oil. So there are quite a lot of opportunities, innovative opportunities, which can be unleashed to protect nature and meet the climate challenge as well. Wow. So,
very encouraging to hear. Thank you so much, Lavanya Rama Iyer of WWF Malaysia. After this, we're going to speak to someone from the Boston Consulting Group. So stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Shrug and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about achieving Malaysia's carbon neutrality targets. Dave Sivaprasad joins us now. He's the Managing Director and Partner of Southeast Asia Leader for Climate and Sustainability for Boston Consulting Group. Dave, when you look at Malaysia's climate change policies, I'm just wondering whether you see enough there to reassure you that there is, in fact, an implementable roadmap in towards achieving carbon neutrality targets by 2050? And if not, where are the gaps that need to be addressed urgently?
Thanks, Melissa, and you know, pleasure to be here, and thanks for the for the invitation to participate in this discussion. I would say that to your question, you know, is there enough there to achieve net zero? And perhaps, you know, I'll start from the premise that, you know, achieving net zero is a complex and challenging undertaking for any economy. It requires substantial transformation in multiple sectors. Energy, transport, you know, across industrials, you know, what consumers do, and so on. So there's a lot that needs to happen for a country to achieve net zero. Now that said, Malaysia has certainly taken some major strides in both its articulation of its commitments as a country or ambition towards net zero, and taking steps across different sectors to start that transition. Now, that said, as well, there's still much more to be done, and Malaysia starts from a position of strength with its natural assets, with forests. We heard some of this from Lavinia from WWF, who described the natural sinks that the country has, and a competitive economy that is well positioned to transition in areas such as energy, in transport, and so on. So there's much more to do, more to see in terms of the plans, but a great starting position, and big moves in terms of taking that pivot towards a positive climate transition.
Dave, can you talk us through some of the pain points or some of the real challenges, considering that Malaysia is a federation? I'm thinking not just of the peninsula, you know, made up of all the states here, but also
you could have a national plan that has targets that are universal across the nation, as it were, or whether you'll have to.
I want to know if you can see this happening, that it would be calibrated depending on the developmental status of the various territories or the sectors, so that what we see is you know, several pathways and a much more complex plan. Do you see that actually happening? Where do you think it's going to be most painful?
Yeah. So having a large and diverse a country with a federated system certainly requires a lot more orchestration from, you know, a federal as well as a local government to enable transition. Now, there are some real practical challenges to overcome. So, for example, the power system across Peninsula, Sabah, and Sarawak. Here we're talking about transitioning a power mix which has a large component of fossil fuels to renewable low-carbon energies. And this poses, you know, practical challenges on how you manage variability of renewable sources of power, how you manage stability of the grid, how you manage the transition in terms of the investments needed over time. So many, you know, practical challenges just in one sector. And you could go on, you know, with industrials, you could go on with the transport sector as well. You're imagining you're looking at a fundamentally different sector that exists, you know, X years from now. And that transition path has many practical challenges, which are economic, which are technical, which are socioeconomic as well. So all of this needs to happen, you know, in a very compressed period of time. And then you overlay that over a country with different states, with different stages of development, but also different advantages and challenges. So, for example, in some states where you have high level of renewable energy and hydro energy, that is a natural advantage that enables the power system transition. In states where you have large forest reserves, being able to manage and preserve and upgrade and enhance that natural asset is a challenge to be managed and an opportunity to be capitalized on. So you can look at Malaysia as a whole, and you can, you know, unpack it with you know, different regional challenges that need to be managed across.
Well, David, we spoke to Lavanya a little bit earlier from WWF Malaysia, and she mentioned that WWF is working with BCG on a survey to kind of think about or to engage stakeholders into a pathway for net zero by 2050. And I'm just wondering, you know, she mentioned that there are things to be encouraged about. There's progress and innovation and enthusiasm among stakeholders. But I'm just wondering, what's the cost of inaction, Dave? What's the danger if we do not achieve these targets, which you say are quite complex already to achieve?
Yeah. No, thanks for that question, Melissa. I would respond in two parts. Let's say there's one part which is if the world doesn't transition, then we are exposed to the physical risk and the impact that will affect everyone. Right. Now that means everyone pursuing a Paris-aligned path, keeping under 1.5 degrees, and so on, which is a major challenge. But that challenge has been quantified by various institutions and various forms of analysis, and the numbers are quite stark, right? So the cost of inaction, you see numbers around 30% of the global economy is at risk from physical impact. That impacts infrastructure, impacts supply chains, impacts the way we live, right? 30% of global GDP. That's the cost of inaction. Now, the cost of mitigation to bend the curve, so to speak, towards a 1.5 degree path is estimated to be something like 2-3% of GDP, global GDP. So that's global cost. Now, then if you say, how does this relate to Malaysia? And that's why I come to the second part of the question, which is everyone needs to act with collective action, right? If only Malaysia does this and everyone else is not at pace, then we're still stuck with the climate impacts and the 30%, cost of inaction. But now, by that said, this is the key, value to the country in taking action. As the global economy pivots, and as countries make commitments, as economies change, the country Malaysia gets impacted through trade, through the ability to attract FDI, the ability to capture the potential new growth sectors where Malaysia has a natural advantage in places like next generation biofuels, hydrogen, renewables, and so on. And this is real opportunity cost of not capturing these sources of new growth. And losing potential green investments that could come to the country. So there is a real risk of...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dave, sorry to interrupt because we're running out of time. Very quick question for you, because you allude to Sarawak and Big Hydro. Is Big Hydro in Sarawak considered renewable? I mean, Sarawak has ambitious plans to be an energy supplier for the region. Do you see that as a problem? Is Big Hydro a renewable?
So look, there's different groups tend to categorize hydro differently. I would say that it's a very attractive low and no carbon source of energy that provides baseload power to the grid, and one that with existing capacity that exists in Sarawak, for example, positions the state and the country in a very advantaged position. So with excess hydro, for example, you can use that power to create new green hydrogen, which is currently what the state is doing, and there's various pilots on developing this green hydrogen for various uses, whether it's in transport or potentially even export to other countries. So this is a natural advantage for the country that can capitalize on.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight and sharing those insights. We appreciate your time. Dave Siva Prasad there from the Boston Consulting Group, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you tonight, a reminder that you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com, as well as the Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.